Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
I have to say, Nancy, that this was really a free-flowing conversation and easy to do and just a lot of fun. And it made me think about things I hadn't thought of in years, and they kind of came back to me. And I just appreciated running the history tables on myself a little bit. And it's just neat to recircle some of that old stuff and then the new stuff about what I'm doing today.
Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. Today's mentor guest is Tim Gilk of Wood & Kahn Corporation. Hey, Tim.
Hi, Nancy.
How you feeling?
I feel great. How about you?
Yeah, I'm feeling really grounded and energized and really excited for this next conversation that we're about to have. And to give the audience the background, Tim Gilk is the owner and president of Wood & Kahn Corporation at Redwood Falls, Minnesota. His company is a wholesale distributor of grain handling and grain storage products and sells services and delivers to dealers all over Minnesota and the Dakotas. Tim began working at Wood & Kahn in 1997. And if you listen to our first conversation, you heard what a wonderful mentor he had in Dave Wood and how the transition to have Tim take over the business, it just seemed really seamless. But one of the core things, and I also find in the research too, if you look at Jim Collins' work with Good to Great, Built to Last, and now he's got his latest book out on Beyond Entrepreneurship, he talks about trust and how critical it is in developing and mentoring others. And it needs to be a foundation of every business in the relationships that they have with their partners, their extended people that they work with, and just anyone in their lives, really. It's a key component to who we are as human beings, is to be being able to develop trust with relationships. Tim began working at Wood & Kahn in 1997 and entered into ownership in 2006, which is what we talked about earlier. Wood & Kahn serves these farm communities with a staff of 8 to 12 people, depending upon the season. Tim's personal life is complete but always expanding, and we'll be talking a little bit about that as well. We did in the first conversation, they're kind of like the Van Trapp family of musicians in the Sound of Music. He's been happily married to Jennifer Gilk for 29 years. They have 3 adult children, of whom they are immensely proud, and they've lived in the same house since 1998. In no particular order, his interests are golf. Incidentally, you live right next to a golf course.
Yeah, we're walking distance to the clubhouse. It's a real hardship.
And you also pheasant hunt, deer hunt. You love doing canoe wilderness camping. You like cold beer, card games, travel, aviation, patio parties, reading nonfiction, singing, and trombone. Your philanthropic side includes piloting for Angel Flight Central. I mentioned in our first conversation that we would get to that. I didn't say that it wouldn't be in the first conversation. So. We'll get to it now. And you're a regular donator of blood, you're a youth leader, and you served 3 tours of duty as a Sunday school teacher. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. In our last conversation, we talked about, you know, not every venture works out, and your extreme first venture and how it kind of crashed and burned, and then how you happened to meet Dave Wood through the selling off of the business. The word got out, right? And he gave you an opportunity to work with him, which helped you to develop a really strong, stable career as an entrepreneur, which when we think of entrepreneurship, I do not think of as stability.
Okay, yeah, sure, I understand.
Yeah, and so, but you have found in the business that you have a product that farmers need, which is they need bins to store their grain. And so that has provided you with an avenue through dealerships to sell your products.
That's right.
All right. So we focused on kind of how you've landed on your feet and how you amazingly kind of recovered from a disastrous circumstances. We're so vulnerable during these transitional times. And the fact that you can reflect on this and say, yeah, these are some really great things that I've done. But I guess what my point is how your venture has stayed with kind of the same number of employees through decades. Is kind of incredible. What do you attribute to that?
Yeah, that's kind of a unique thing. You know, normally when you think of a business growing, and ours has grown, you think that you're going to have to add stuff. Part of the stuff is employees, and the business model here has been super successful in the last. In this particular business, probably over the last 30 years, where you have two or three people doing the selling out in the territory, traveling, doing that kind of stuff. You have a couple people in the office doing the bookkeeping stuff. And you have two, three, four people running around either driving truck or working in the warehouse, assembling equipment. It's just a formula that it's enough people with that size staff. And whenever I interview somebody that wants to come work here, I make it known, especially if they're a sales type, I make it known that we're unique. We all work. We all put on work boots. We all wear safety glasses. We all run a forklift. We all go out and lift iron. We all work physically. We physically work. And if you want to work here, you have to be willing to go out in the shop or outside and get the gloves on. So with that mindset, we've been successful.
Yeah, and with that size, too, it's able to manage the relationships. Like, you don't have to add another layer in of management, you know, so you can keep it very direct.
Yeah, being the owner, president, manager, supervisor, anything that's complicated, a difficult situation finds its way to me. Otherwise, we all work, we all do our thing. We all know what we're supposed to do, and everybody here seems to pull it off day to day. So we've got some reliable and honest, hardworking staff, and that's a big key to our success.
Yeah, excellent. And it sounds like you really value the relationships that you develop with them because they stay with you for a long period of time.
Yeah, we've got one or two people that have been here since the 1970s and the 1980s. So people don't, the turnover is low in my business, and that's kind of fun. We get relationships long-term with people, get to know their families. People tend to hang around.
Yeah. In a second-generation business, you've got kind of the kinks worked out, and you know the industry well. And because you've grown into it, also you can kind of see how things need to change, if at all. They're subtle.
Yeah, it's kind of a moving target as far as marketing strategy and purchasing strategy. I just go with the flow on that. But I found along the way that, you know, we deal with two worlds. We purchase things, so we're dealing with our suppliers, and we develop strong partnerships with them. So our supply chain is a long-term relationship. When we find a good supplier, we're with them for decades. But the same on the sales side. We're not a one-and-done. We look for to sell to dealerships where we can have a partnership and keep them in our fold for, again, if at all possible, decades. So it's really finding partnerships, people who have similar values, people who we can listen to and understand, who understand us. It's a two-way street on the partnership. It's on the supply side and the sales side.
Yeah. Would you say that this year has been kind of the biggest year of transition with your business since you've owned it?
Well, it hasn't been our biggest year for dollars, but it's had some unique challenges with the pandemic. overall, we have been affected way less than a lot of businesses in the area, in Minnesota and upper Midwest. We've survived it pretty well. But it's been at times really challenging. Kind of the whole year has been a transition in adapting to how we deal with the pandemic.
Yeah, and you've had, for the first time, kind of put in place some things that are protective of your staff.
Yeah, and that's been kind of new ground for me because we have a shop, we have equipment, we're always thinking about employee safety. You know, we have safety training and we wear safety equipment. We do that, but now we're thinking about other things like employee health and customer health. We just certainly don't want to expose our staff or families or customers to any diseases. So that's kind of a new dimension. And we had to take some steps to do that. One was we locked the door and restricted access for the public. Locking the door was hard, but it's necessary. If people wanted to come and see us, talk to us, buy from us, it was we made it by appointment. Mm-hmm. And after about a few weeks of figuring out the kinks of that, we've made it work. And that makes our staff feel very protected. You just know the doors are locked and there's going to be no unintended walk-ins. We're a selling company, but we sell stuff and we like to have our territory people out in the territory selling. And we've had to curtail that activity, doing more and more selling over the phone, over email. That's been a kind of an ongoing transition, and it's worked, but it's just been different.
Yeah. It takes an adjustment for everybody.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Especially with sales when they like the people contact.
Yeah. And the nice thing is that everyone's treated equally. This pandemic, it knows no income level, it knows no political party, it knows no industry. Certainly, people that we deal with as suppliers and as customers have been affected, and it has screwed up a supply chain a few times. So it's real, and it has slowed things down. It's made life interesting, dancing that dance. The nice thing is that it's an equal opportunity pandemic, and so people are forced to deal with it, and people understand that it's real. And when the supply chain is affected, well, there's a reason for it. Nothing they did wrong, or nothing we did wrong. The next step is figuring out how to adjust the next few weeks of your life from that moment of disruption. And that's an ongoing transition right there.
Yeah, right. It's that adaptability. Like, okay, we know that we're resilient and that we put some things in place to help us be resilient. But now, in order to maintain staying in business and in kind of operating in this kind of environment, we need to adapt.
Yeah,
because initially we thought it was just going to be a few months. And so, you know, a little bit of adjustment. But the longer it's gone on, the more we're seeing, you know, people getting frustrated with it. And and it's kind of taken a toll.
That's where my world of partnerships, whether it's on a supply side, partnerships with our factories and suppliers, or partnerships on our selling side, partnerships with our dealers and customer base. That's where those established partnerships were really vital, because when we have these partnerships and this trust built in, it makes it a lot easier to navigate when the supply chain is screwed up, or trucking is screwed up, or invoicing is screwed up, or things get screwed up in a pandemic. I learned that lesson many times. And if you have these quality partnerships, it just makes it easier to navigate.
Yeah, there's less drama in it because you know, everybody's assuming you're doing the best you can.
Right.
And that they're being upfront with you about what they're experiencing. So it takes out any drama, it takes out a lot of miscommunications.
All right, I agree. Yes.
Yeah, and it keeps it real instead of morphing into another dynamic that you now have to address that has nothing to do with solving the problem.
Right. That's so true.
Yeah. Well, that's excellent. That, again, reinforcing the ability to have trusting relationships
right.
can help you through anything. And you're all kind of in it together. And because you're so farmers in general, they've been affected by the pandemic, but they've been able to, you know, they're kind of in their own bubbles.
Yeah, the farming community farms, they're somewhat insulated from the pandemic, at least medically, physically, because farms are out, they're remote. They don't exist in a metro area. They don't exist in a large populated area. Now, there are plenty of farmers who have had COVID on their farms, have dealt with that. But I would suspect that the rate of infection is lower among people who farm. But their lives are still affected because they have their own supply chain with inputs to their crops and their livestock, with places they sell crop and sell livestock.
Yeah, and dairy farmers having, trucking.
Dairy farmers have activity almost usually every day with trucks in and out. So they have some exposure. But in general, I found that the farmers are supportive and understanding of the need to navigate this. So, yeah, it's the farm community is certainly a little more insulated than the rest of the economy, but it still has some exposure.
Yeah, absolutely. In how you're living your life and how you're raising your kids, your work is different than how you grew up as far as your parents being absorbed in the work. Is that accurate?
Well, I hope I'm better at being tuned into my kids. I have good parents. I don't want to complain about my parents, but I hope that I'm a little better at being tuned into their immediate and long-term needs. So I'd like to think so.
Yeah. Okay. As a result of having that kind of stability, you've also been able to do some really phenomenal work with helping others out.
Yeah. Yeah. Early in life, I grew up in an airport-based business. I learned to fly at a really young age. And about 8 or 10 years ago, we finally had the means to purchase our own airplane. And now I'm geared towards acts of service. I mean, I've served as a Sunday school teacher. I've done other things in our church, in our community. And I have this big dumb airplane that doesn't get flown enough. And I was doing some reading in one of the aviation magazines. Those are really fascinating. Everybody should read aviation magazines. They're just super fascinating.
Are you being facetious?
I learned that there are these charity organizations that they're called Angel Flight. What they do is they fly people with volunteer pilots. They fly people to medical appointments. People who have to travel a reasonably long distance, and perhaps airline travel is too expensive for them, or it's not possible because of the remoteness of their location, and then they qualify based on income. They can't afford to get their own airline to travel this long distance. Perhaps the trip is 500 or 1,000 miles. So that's where these charities come into play. I fly for one that's called Angel Flight Central, which covers all of the upper Midwest. And what I do is if I accept a mission from Angel Flight Central, I fly somewhere, let's say Fargo, North Dakota, as an example, and I pick up a passenger or two, and I take them to some place where they're going to receive medical treatment, perhaps Rochester or the Twin Cities. And there are all kinds of variations of locations. But we're flying people who have scheduled appointments. This is not air ambulance or emergency transport. This is people who have to go someplace. Cancer is a very popular one. Who have to go someplace for some treatment or some diagnosis or some consultation. And it's just great because we get to use our airplanes. We get to do something we love. Us pilots get to fly our airplanes. And these passengers receive the benefit, the blessing of a free trip. And it's just a fabulous organization. And I wish the word would get out more and more because the demand is so high. There are all kinds of people all over the Midwest, all over the country, in fact, who have to travel a long distance for medical care. And if they qualify based on income, they can sure look at Angel Flight and get there quickly and in most cases for free.
Oh, great. Well, I'll put a link in the show notes.
Yeah, Angel Flight Central.
Yeah, okay, that's great. Yeah, I have never heard of it until, you talked about it.
Yeah, it's really a blessing for the passengers, and it's a blessing for the pilots. We get to be recognized and fly our airplanes, which we love to do anyway. It's just a win-win.
Yeah, and we've flown with you, and you're a terrific pilot.
Well, I've got you trained to say those things. So that's very nice. I've been at it a while, but piloting is one of those skills that always needs tune-up and refurbishing and re-education. So it's kind of an ongoing thing, but I appreciate your comments.
Yeah, that's great. And Carter, your eldest son is into the business.
Yeah, he's into the flying business. Yeah, he kind of took off where my dad left off. Carter has gone to college. Now he's just graduated right now, this winter. He has a commercial pilot's degree, and he's currently working as a flight instructor and hopes someday to bump up to a big boy job with an airline or some kind of a scheduled cargo freight company, or who knows where it's going to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's going out on his own in the world of aviation.
That's awesome. Jennifer was just starting out her business. So when her and I had a conversation a couple years ago, her episodes I'll include also in the show notes. One is Dairy Farm Upbringing Inspired an Entrepreneurial Work Ethic in This Attorney. And well-built reputation leads to startup success. It's cool because when you drive through Red River Falls, you see your business and then you also see Jennifer's law practice. And you bought this building. Was it a dental office before that? And you kind of renovated it.
Yeah. When she started her own firm, she first rented an office for a couple of years, and then we were able to buy this former dentist office, did her extensive remodel, and I think she's been in that building for 2 or 3 years now.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about how you work within a relationship, because both of you, do you have a commitment like to help each other with their dreams, or how have you, worked this out so well?
Yeah, I got to say, Jennifer's great. She's always, if I have ideas I need to bounce off of somebody, she's always willing to be that listening post, whether it be with human resource questions or tax questions or whatever it is. She's always a good resource. And I try to be the same for her. I'm probably not as good. She's a better listener than I am. There's some positive feedback we can give each other in the entrepreneurial world. So that is nice.
And it seems like both of you have other people that you're able to talk through and have really meaningful conversations with that help you guys partner even more, so that you're not carrying the load of all the intensity of the emotion, between just the two of you.
Yeah, we've got a handful of friends who are in business. We have a really good accountant and financial advisor, and we've got some professionals we can call on to clarify things when we just don't get it.
Yeah, and how has that helped in raising your three kids? Like, what were the boundaries that you kind of set in place for? Because I imagine we used to have rigorous money meetings, like every week, Saturday mornings, Matthew and I would have the money meetings. And now it's we still have them, but it's more fluid.
Sure.
But it took us a while to kind of get in, and that has helped us with talking about, and deepening our trust with each other is really having these deeper conversations, because I don't have a business partner, and Matthew's in a firm where he's, not in partnership with them. And so we are, work those decisions out and have the conversations between the two of us, and not having a business partner, you're the lone person. And like with you and Jennifer, you're running your own practices and your own business. And so you don't have a partner to run things off of, but you see each other as the business partner, but you also have this romantic relationship with the person.
Yeah.
So how do you, manage all of that?
Yeah.
And
on the financial side of it, the money talks, we trust each other implicitly. We come at it from slightly different mindsets My wife grew up on a dairy farm, as you said, and just plainly said, times are tough. When she was a kid on the farm, it was a tough time to be in farming. There wasn't a lot of extra income. They really had to be penny pinchers. There was a successful farm and a good childhood, but financially it was hard.
Yeah.
So she is extra cautious when it comes to money matters, more than I am. And so she comes from a mindset of super cautiousness, where I'm a little more freewheeling, but we make that work, and we're both completely open where we have those money talks, not weekly, but intermittently. And we discuss projections, forecasts, deposits, all that stuff. And we're just upfront and honest about the condition of the business. Some years are really good. Some are not so good. Sometimes there's a stressful few months. Sometimes it's clear sailing. But we just keep that communication open.
And do you have, like, does one business fund the other? Or how do you work it out during the tighter times financially? Do you have some things set up in the background, you know, loans you can tap into? Or how do you, you know, work the cash flow when the money's tight?
Yeah, we do have a line of credit we can access. We haven't had to very many times. We have a modest savings that we can tap into when we need to. Again, it hasn't happened many times, but we have a couple of small contingency plans like that, and we've been able to make that work.
Yeah, that's great. And how have you raised such great kids?
Well, you know, I don't really know. It just kind of happened. But they certainly are fabulous, and we're proud of all three of them. So I don't know how we did that. I'll take the credit, but I'm not sure why.
Well, it's been you two seem very involved and present and connected with your kids emotionally, and also supportive of, and you seem to have a way of working through conflict that's really admirable.
Well, I hope so. They're fabulous kids, and you know, are they perfect? No, but you know, they don't have perfect parents either. So
I don't know how
somehow
that's possible.
Somehow we make that work.
Yeah, that's very good. Yeah. Okay. So I love the way that you have set up, you know, protecting what you've been learning through, 2020 with the customer service and protecting your staff. And then also thanks for being so open too about talking about, your married life and working out so that each of you can have your successful businesses, because with three kids, it's usually one or the other. You've been able to have both of you be financially secure and stable and in professions that you genuinely really both love.
Yeah, I would add to the mix that there are times when both of our jobs get pretty demanding.
Yeah.
My business, I'm fortunate. I don't have to work a lot of weekends. Now, Jennifer, she gets into these busy cycles in the field of law, where there's just a lot of work to be done, and so she does have to put in some weekends and evenings on occasion. And we've made that work, but in general, one of us is always home on the weekends and evenings, which is I think a big thing for being successful parents, is just being around.
Yeah. Yeah. And how has it been for you on the worrying side with your kids at school with COVID? I mean, they haven't had COVID, but they're around, you know, how do you protect yourselves? And even if they've had COVID, I mean, at some point, probably everybody will be close to getting it.
That is just an unfolding, constantly evolving situation. The universities are, in my opinion, heroic. They're doing a fabulous job of keeping the places open, requiring masks, doing everything they can to make the places safe. That said, young people are still very young, and they're prone to congregate, socialize, forget the rules at times. So it is stressful as parents. I've come to a realization that there is only so much we can do from a couple hundred miles away. There's only so much we can do. So we try to reinforce the rules set in place by these schools and hope the kids live by them. But that is a stressful thing. And again, there's only so much as a parent that you can do from a remote distance.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Like I've been doing a lot more meditating.
Okay.
Because the stressors were kind of getting to me like stir crazy, just, the volume of everything that has happened this year or last year. Are there any things that you have done with techniques that you use to help decrease some of your stress or manage it?
Well, it just occurred to me that maybe this is also a byproduct of the house being empty, but I have really gotten back into reading a lot this past fall and early winter. And that is really a way to numb the mind and just kind of calm down is to do some reading.
Yeah. And what have been your favorite reads this last year?
I'm almost exclusively, I read nonfiction, I like history type concepts. I've stumbled into several of Bob Woodward's books.
Oh yeah.
And he's a fascinating writer. And the one I enjoyed the most was one he did a few years ago about, I think the man's name was Alexander Butterfield. He's the guy that broke the secret during the Watergate hearings that yes, there is a taping system in the White House. And that man's story is fascinating.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, he's got the latest one out of Rage, covering
President Trump. Finished that one.
Oh, did you? What did you think? I just finished it about 6 weeks ago.
Yeah. He has a lot of insight into the nuts and bolts of how the White House was working. And some of the things that we assumed maybe weren't true. He had some good comments about some people that are perceived sometimes as a little on the evil side in the media world. But he tells a really good story about a president that is mostly out of control. And I was just grateful that he had that access and was able to record those things.
Yeah, I was really more disturbed than I had already been with the 17 conversations that he had. You know, when you see them in print, the erratic thinking.
Yeah.
And to counter that, then I read Barack Obama's The Promised Land book. And that is such a tremendous read because he does go into like the decision making and all what he was going through. So we know what was going on with the media. And like even with Bob Woodward, we can see from Bob's perspective kind of what his view is. And he's got a lot of research behind it. He's such a, and it was an, I was engrossed with both books. I mean, I really appreciated like hearing the words from Barack's own mouth, you know, of what he experienced while he was, you know, running the country and how he came. And his first book, a little over 700 pages, is covering the first 2 years of his administration. And so you really get a sense up to the killing of Osama bin Laden. And it's just interesting to hear, you know, what the perspective is of what's going on in the White House and what's being managed there.
Yeah, yeah.
And Bob Woodward was good about, too, capturing some of that nuances.
Yeah,
there.
He's been doing this for decades. It's amazing. The investigative powers, the questions he asks, he just knows what he's doing.
Yeah, and he knows how to put it in a story form, so like you're engaged as a reader the entire time.
Yeah, that's so true. So I would recommend to anybody who's looking for a good book, the one about Alexander Butterfield is just fascinating.
Okay, well, I think I'm going to check into that because I've been able to do more reading and have been doing a fair amount of binge watching of stuff too.
Yeah, I probably watch too much TV, but the reading is a good offset to that.
Yeah, yeah, as long as you have a little bit of a balance of both.
Yeah.
Well, this has been just fantastic. I just appreciate your time and your insights and your depth of sharing what you've been experiencing as a business owner. It's really good to know business owners like you.
Well, thank you. And this has been an interesting talk for me. Thank you.
Well, good. And is there anything else that you would like to add in before we leave our conversation today?
No, I think I'm good.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, thank you so much again. And thank you, audience, for tuning in. And I'm so grateful, too, for mon frère de notre mère, my brother from another mother. Thank you for taping the show. Okay. And we'll see you all next week. Keep tuning in. I've got so many great conversations to keep bringing your way. All right. We'll see you next time. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become more effective as a business owner? Do you want to reinvent yourself or evolve as you redesign your business? This is a dual innovation process. Are you ready to take charge of who you next become? If the answer is yes, I've been developing and implementing mentoring programs to thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and business owners and their teams since 1992. I totally love it and feel I'm on this planet to involve the leadership in the world from the inside out. Of course, this means seeing myself as a work in progress, which is beneficial to you because I'm not stagnant and I'm motivated to create and bring you incredible programming all the time. So here's a few ways that you can get involved in our WeMentor self-leadership community. You can subscribe for free through WeMentor.com to the podcast. You can also find it on Apple Podcasts, which used to be iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, Blueberry Directory, iHeartRadio, or TuneIn Radio, which is where you can shout out your request on smart home device through Alexa, Cortana, Amazon Echo, and Google Home. You can also become a sponsor of this program and support what's happening here in all these meaningful conversations. Or you can get one-on-one mentoring and go at your own pace as you evolve into the leader that you've always wanted to become. You can join a WeMentor Mini Lab, which we offer several times during the year. We're focused on some element of self-leadership and your progress toward becoming more effective. And the last and final way in which you can get involved in WeMentor's self-leadership community is by joining a one-year entrepreneurial leadership and mentoring lab where we dig into the details and help you with the operational along with your leadership skills so you can evolve with your entity and really, really progress in building the life that you've always wanted to build. So please check out WeMentor.com. You can email me, Nancy, at WeMentor.com, or call me, 1-612-804-8920. All right, keep listening, and we'll see you next week.